but he's got the letter of the grand slam.
Thank good.
Our 12-year-old neighbor got one.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to open the March 17, 2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. We are convened. Today we're going to hear a couple of bills and have a couple of work sessions as well. The first bill up is House Bill 3334. I'm going to open a public hearing on that bill. And Mr. Gallagher, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3334 requires Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board to spend $2 million per year out of the flexible incentives account on implementation of strategies to protect and restore sage-grouse habitat.
A very, very critical subject, should this bird ever be listed. I see we have Representative Bentz with us this morning. Good morning and welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Chair Whedon. Thank you very much for hearing this bill, members of the committee. Cliff Bentz, District 60, 99% of which is sage-grouse habitat. A couple of things. I want to begin by thanking Chair Whit for hearing this bill. It's extraordinarily important to my district. I want to thank the Governor's Office, Richard Whitman, Brett Brownscombe, Kurt Melcher, Middle Office Garden, and all the folks that have worked so hard to try to head off the listing of this grouse. I just wanted to read briefly an article in today's Oregon, which you should have on OLIS. Grants passed. A federal judge ruled Monday that federal forest managers have to take a harder look at the environmental harm that could be caused by a new forestry project planned in northern spotted owl habitat as a way to break a logjam over timber harvest in the northwest. U.S. District Judge Ann Aiken ruled in Eugene that the environmental analysis in the U.S. Bureau of Land Management did on the White Castle timber sale outside Roseburg was inadequate, and she ordered a more stringent environmental impact statement. This is the future of my part of the state if that bird is listed. The future will be nothing happening except lawsuits. So today's bill is designed to take an existing funding source, the monies that come from lottery, about $40 million a year, that go to the OWEB, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, take $2 million of that for the next 5 years each, and spend it the way it would have been spent anyway on sage-grouse restoration. Why would I bring a bill that basically says, please do what you're already doing? For a couple of reasons. First, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife will take into account a dedicated, for sure, funding stream for rehabilitation of grouse habitat. Well, we're already doing it, but it's not guaranteed. The bill here says we will spend $2 million a year for 5 years. I'm quite sure that we may spend more than that, but this establishes that firm foundation that U.S. Fish and Wildlife will be looking for this fall. And the beauty of it is, we don't have to go to Ways and Means and ask for the money. The amendment that is, I think, that the dash one, places the request for the funds back into where the $40 million is. The bill as crafted would have to go to Ways and Means, and I'm not at all sure that we would find the money there. And why bother when we already have it? So what we are trying to do today is share with the committee the concerns of the community, and that's why we have Baker standing by with a number of people to testify, and Burns. I think Burns will go first. And they're standing by. You'll see them in a few minutes by video link, which is our attempt to try to bring the reality of the future of that area before us here in Salem. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'm going to get out of the road and let those who have been dealing with this in such detail, and I think with great effect. I want to mention the state has taken this very seriously, and I'm deeply appreciative of that. So when Richard Whitman comes up to talk, he deserves credit for all the hard work he's been doing. He understands that we can't shut down another third of Oregon. We just can't afford it. And so what we can do here today may partially head that off. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so very, very much, Representative Benson. I understand, too, that it's not just at Oregon's peril that we would risk a listing either, that there would be a number of western states, and that some endangered species listings that we've already experienced would pale in comparison.
Absolutely correct, and more detail to follow.
Thank you so very, very much. Before we proceed on this bill, Representative Gomberg, this could be a lengthy hearing, and I suspect that you may have other business here in the building today. Would you like an opportunity to testify on House Bill 3333 before we proceed?
We appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And just for the public, because we have members who have business elsewhere, we provide them an opportunity to testify so that they can get on to that other business. Because of that, I am going to temporarily close the hearing on House Bill 3334, and I am going to temporarily open the public hearing on House Bill 3333 to accommodate Representative Gomberg's schedule. And if there's anyone else that you would like to bring forward, please do so.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for your consideration. Members of the committee, I am Representative David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Coast. We appreciate the opportunity to briefly introduce 3333 for you. And this is a simple and straightforward bill, which, as you know, deals with the salmon license plate and the funds derived from that. And the bill simply says that we would like to send that money where it was originally intended to go and to spend the money on things that are wet, rather than spending it on administrative issues, grants administration, or web page development. And I just wanted to simply introduce the bill that way to you, and then turn this over to Commissioner Terry Thompson, who as a legislator crafted the original legislation, as well as representatives from the agency that are currently administering the program. And I did want to say that I appreciate that they have made a course correction, and they are doing what we believe the bill originally intended, but we wanted to bring the bill forward for you anyway and make sure that that we don't steer off course at some indeterminate point in the future.
Very good. Thank you.
My name is Terry Thompson, the Lincoln County Commissioner, and I was the original drafter of the bill, but the original person who thought up the idea was our staffs at that time, and Mike Lehman from Coos Bay. He was the representative here, and I brought the bill forward because I was working on the Oregon Salmon Plan. Please remember, at the time, OWEB didn't even exist, and we were struggling to get agencies to find some money to start the first real salmon recovery project. In the original bill, money went to the Transportation Department intended for culvert work and the Parks Department because they had no money in their budget to do salmon work. So this came to highlight by a reporter from Portland in the Oregonian who had done some research and found out the money was not being the way it was originally intended. And like I say, I'm not here to beat OWEB up, but I think the legislature is intent is to correct the mistake and also OWEB's and put that money back where the public gifted them the money. I figure this is a gift from the public of actual money to do projects, and we should make that a very high priority.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Representative Whip, members of the committee. For the record, Maida Lofsgaarden, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today in support of House Bill 3333. OWEB's mission is to help protect and restore healthy watersheds and natural habitats that support thriving communities and strong economies. This bill will ensure that salmon plate revenues are focused on native salmon habitat and removal of barriers to native salmon migration. As was mentioned previously, OWEB is currently developing design options for a grant program that will be presented to our board for their consideration. Any option proposed would meet the criteria that are established as a part of this legislation. We have a strong history of partnering with local organizations to invest in clean water and healthy native fish and wildlife populations. To date, we've invested over $540 million in local projects to meet those goals, including Measure 76 lottery funds, federal grant dollars, and salmon plate revenues. We've had a lot of accomplishments. 4,300 miles of streams that have been improved, 5,600 miles of habitat made accessible for fish, and we look forward to continuing this work with our partners in local communities across the state. We have determined as a part of this process that the need to provide a package to the Joint Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee addressing the funding shift that will occur in our budget as a result of this bill. We've notified the committee and that we will be bringing them final information in the near future.
Thank you very, very much. Yes, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This kind of brings to light, I wonder if there's anything else other than this salmon plate that's going on with our departments using the monies for different issues. And I'm thinking maybe we should have a committee bill in February of next year that would make them divulge that information to the Ways and Means process. If they're using some monies from a certain pot, they should bring that out in their budget and let Ways and Means chew on it to see if we should proceed down that course. Other than, no wonder people have lost confidence in the government because they feel they've had a bait and switch. So,
thank you, Representative Esquivel. Don't feel obligated to respond, but if you would so choose.
Well, I will respond, being a past legislator. I worry that some of the funds that we have, and I mean, there's all kinds of funds, special funds that we have set up, that are not being used exactly the way it was intended. I'm not sure how the committee would be formed or exactly what, but it's something that we should look at, is to make sure that all of our funds, not just license plate funds, are being expended in the way that they were originally intended.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger.
Also, when we get into fiscal crisis, the state finds it necessary in a Ways and Means process to sweep funds out of certain places. Mm-hmm. One of the things they cannot do is license fees, where they're going to be, and won't get their cost share from the feds. We need to have some consideration where those funds have been dedicated and they're paid by a special interest group to protect something or achieve a particular goal, that those funds are not swept, because the total of those small fund dedicated funds within Department of Fish and Wildlife in different places, if they came from some source other than license fees, probably do a lot better where they are than taking them out of those agencies.
Additional questions or comments for this panel? Well, Commissioner Thompson, I certainly appreciate your setting us back on track. And it's quite accurate, I think, that we do lose the public's confidence when we don't adhere to original intents and when we sweep funds. I personally am very frustrated by these occurrences, and it's something that the longer I'm in this building, I find the more frequency it appears to be happening. And so there was intent on this bill. I remember that bill from many years ago. And again, thank you all so very, very much for your testimony and your appearance. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
And with that, I am going to temporarily close the public hearing on House Bill 3333. And again, folks, we will return to this one after we've completed testimony on the first bill. I'm going to reopen the public hearing on 3334. And I appreciate the public's working with us as we switch back and forth with these bills. With that, I'd like to call forward, please, Jamie Damon, Brett Brownscombe, and Richard Whitman. Good morning to each of you, and welcome. Please decide among yourselves the order of your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Witt and Vice Chair McLean. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody.
Thank you.
See a little bit of green among you. Thank you very much for having us here this morning, and a special thanks to Representative Bentz for putting this informational panel together. My name is Jamie Damon. I am the SageCon Project Manager for the state, working out of the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University. We've organized our time this morning to start off with a brief video that's about 3 minutes that's hot off the presses. It came out just last week by the Backcountry Hunters, and it does a really good job of setting the stage of the range of partners that have been working to address the threats to sage-grouse in Oregon. It includes some interviews from some of our federal partners who you'll see are not joining us today. So we'll start with that, and then we'll move to Richard Whitman, the governor's natural resource policy advisor, who will talk with you about how we've been coordinating with our federal partners and across the state and with our private and conservation partners as well in addressing sage-grouse and the kinds of investments that are potentially being proposed. And then we'll move back to me, and I'll give you some highlights about how we've been coordinating with everyone for the last couple of years. And then we'll move to Brett Brownscombe, Deputy Interim Director from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, who'll talk with you more specifically about some actions on the ground. So that I think our total time together is about 20, 25 minutes for our informational panel. And then I believe we'll be moving to a couple of remote locations where we have some folks standing by to offer some additional information. That's, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Appreciate your setting the stage.
Okay. So with that, I think, Shelley, we're all teed up.
So damn thick mowing hay that you had to get off the tractor and shoo them out of the hay or you'd mow them up.
Sage-grouse can serve as an umbrella species, if you will, and conserving sage-grouse can have great benefits for animals, including mule deer, pronghorn, pygmy rabbits, a variety of songbirds, and even a variety of insects and other critters we don't think about too awful much. The need to save, if you will, or conserve sage-grouse is largely based on the fact that we're talking about an extraordinarily unique animal, an icon of the American West, if you will. It was first described by Lewis and Clark, and in part defines our lifestyle as Westerners. We're talking about a wildland species. They do not do very well close to habitats that have been impacted by development.
Obviously, it's taken a very contentious Endangered Species Act listing proposal to sort of make everyone come together. And often that's, you know, that's the way it works when you're facing a kind of a challenge or a controversial sort of issue.
The major threats include wildfire and the accompanying invasive species, invasive plant species that go along with these large wildfires. Wildfires totally wipe out sage-grouse habitat.
Field breaks, putting field breaks in, it gives them something to work with, where they've got a break here where it's defensible. Conditions are extreme, at least they can compartment that fire to 50 to 100,000 acres rather than, you know, some of these fires are 400,000 acres plus, which that's a huge detriment to sage-grouse.
With some of the changes that have occurred in the last 150 years since humans have been here, at least these European settlers have been here, juniper has started to invade the shrub steppe landscape, and if allowed to invade unchecked, we'll lose that sagebrush, which is so important to wildlife to utilize Heart Mountain. So we are in the process, and have been for a few years now, of basically taking that juniper that's coming down to the sagebrush and removing it back to where it might exist naturally.
Here in Oregon, we've basically solved about 68% of this juniper problem on our priority private lands. And so we can start to measure this and show that we're making demonstrable progress. So yeah, I'm optimistic about the trajectory.
So I'm very optimistic, and one of the reasons why is that collaboration is really breaking down old barriers. Agencies are working together, stakeholders are at the table, whether it's ranchers and environmentalists, we're all, you know, pulling towards that common objective of trying to keep the sage-grouse, you know, on the landscape and healthy populations.
I'm highly encouraged. We started out in this effort, now it seems over 2 years ago, and in fact, I was part of the team in 2005 that made the not warranted finding for Fish and Wildlife Service, and then again part of the team in 2010 that made the warranted but precluded finding, and now here we are again 5 years later. So it's been a total of 10 years that we've been working on this.
In Oregon and other states, stakeholders including cattlemen and sportsmen, along with federal and state agencies, are working hard to keep the greater sage-grouse from becoming endangered. We encourage all states to join the effort. Together we can protect this iconic bird, local economies, and our Western way of life.
So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Richard Whitman.
Thanks, Jamie. For the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Brown's Natural Resource Advisor. Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Pleasure to be here to talk about sage-grouse.
Backcountry hunters and anglers, our motto is the sportsman's voice for public lands, water, and wildlife. And really what backcountry hunters and anglers is about is protecting public land and protecting habitat resources so we can enjoy the great outdoors.
I think backcountry hunters and anglers.
Too bad we missed the hunting video.
Obviously, that video was so good, we just had to see it twice. Okay, thank you. Great, thanks. Thanks much. So I want to give the committee a little bit more background on the effort that's been going on in Oregon related to sage-grouse and talk about the situation that we find ourselves in right now. And I'm going to start in, not go all the way back, but in 2010, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made a determination that the listing of sage-grouse is warranted under the Federal Endangered Species Act. So from the federal perspective, at least in 2010, if they had made a decision in 2010, they would have listed sage-grouse as a threatened species in 11 western states. It was precluded at that time because they didn't have resources to move forward with the listing decision. The main reasons that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made that determination in 2010, at least with regard to Oregon, have to do with three particular things. Wildfire, and you saw that in the video that you just saw. We have, in the last 2 years, in particular in Oregon, have had very extensive rangeland fires in Oregon that, if anything, have made the fire situation worse. And then along with fire, and in part the cause of fire, the spread of invasive grasses and weeds, and then juniper, which fuel the fire situation in eastern Oregon. And then finally, habitat fragmentation is also cited as a reason for that determination. Oregon Fish and Wildlife has been working on the sage-grouse issue, as have other partners, for some time. In 2011, the Fish and Wildlife Commission adopted a sage-grouse conservation strategy that called for protection of particular areas where most of the population of sage-grouse live, 90% of the population. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute. So where are we right now in the process? Well, a large part of the land in eastern Oregon is actually owned by the federal government, as I think most of you know. So the Bureau of Land Management is the primary manager of those lands and has been working on revisions to their land management plans to deal with sage-grouse on BLM lands. And those revisions to the BLM plans are due out this summer. And then in the fall of this year, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is scheduled to make a new determination as to whether the listing of sage-grouse is warranted under the federal ESA. A number of you may have heard that Congress, in a continuing resolution last fall, included a provision that prevents the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service from actually, if the listing is warranted, actually adopting a listing rule. But that rider in the continuing resolution does not actually prevent the Fish and Wildlife Service from making the biological determination of whether listing is warranted. So they are temporarily precluded from adopting a listing rule if they determine that is needed. but they're not long-term, they're not blocked from moving forward on a listing determination on this bird. So for purposes of the effort of Oregon cattlemen, Oregon counties, the state of Oregon, the Bureau of Land Management, we are all treating this as full speed ahead. We need to keep working on this issue and put a state plan in Oregon in place that provides for the continuing economic vitality of Eastern Oregon and provides for the conservation of the bird. So if I could go to the next slide on this PowerPoint presentation, please. So what area are we actually talking about in Oregon? Well, the light green areas here are the overall area of sage-grouse habitat in Oregon, and then the brown-orange areas are the core areas that I was speaking to earlier. And so the basic strategy that Oregon has taken and many other states are now following is to identify these areas of greatest importance for sage-grouse, these core areas, and really work to conserve sage-grouse within those areas in particular. Brett, could I have the next slide, please?
If you say please.
Please. There we go. So this is just a slide showing for Oregon what the long-term population trend in Oregon is. And so with that background, I want to talk through a little bit more about what is the state effort? What have we been doing? First of all, I want to refer back to what Representative Bentz noted. Sage-grouse as the northern spotted owl of the prairie, if you will. It's actually even worse than that, if you think about it, because northern spotted owls live within or nest within and roost within circles, and that's been the main strategy for northern spotted owls. Sage-grouse move around more. They take up more area. So the actual area that we're talking about that might be affected by sage-grouse is a much broader expanse of the landscape than even the northern spotted owl. So the potential implications for eastern Oregon in terms of mining, in terms of geothermal development, in terms of wind development, in terms of infrastructure, roads, water infrastructure, all of those things are very directly threatened by this potential listing of sage-grouse in eastern Oregon. Recognizing that, and I should say first and foremost, of course, the main economic activity in eastern Oregon is ranching, our cattle industry. And so recognizing that fact, the Oregon cattlemen and Harney County Soil and Water Conservation District really were the early leaders, and you're going to hear from some of these folks in a minute, were the early leaders in starting to work on conservation of sage-grouse. The Oregon cattlemen have really taken the lead in putting together conservation agreements for ranchers on both federal and non-federal lands, along with Harney County Soil and Water Conservation District. And those agreements are for willing landowners to consider, if they sign up to those agreements and agree to undertake certain conservation practices on their land, then they will be protected from any listing decision that the federal government might make. So you're going to hear CCAAs and CCAs. Those are government acronyms for different types of conservation agreements that, again, the cattlemen and the counties have really taken the lead on. For other activities, for mining, energy development, roads, infrastructure, industrial development in eastern Oregon, that's where work of state government and, to some extent, the Oregon counties come in. And so in 2012, the Oregon governor pulled together something called the SageCon Partnership, which is a partnership of the state of Oregon, the Federal Natural Resources Conservation Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Bureau of Land Management, counties, conservation groups, energy interest, really the whole range of interests potentially affected by this listing, to work together to put all, to knit together the conservation agreements that the ranchers are doing with other conservation efforts that state, local government, and private landowners are doing to avoid a listing in eastern Oregon. So I want to come back to, again, the primary reasons that sage grouse might be listed in Oregon are wildfire, invasive annual grasses, and juniper. Well, how do you deal with wildfire? How do you deal with invasive grasses? How do you deal with juniper? It's not something we can regulate either as state government or local government our way out of. This is something that takes resources to deal with. It takes money. It takes elbow grease on the ground to deal with these issues. So if I could go to the last slide, please. In the governor's recommended budget for the 15-17 biennium, there are a whole series of packages for agencies that are related to this effort, and they're all directly really related to the three threats that I talked about: fire, grasses, and juniper. So first of all, a fairly significant package for the Oregon Department of Forestry to deal with our infrastructure in eastern Oregon for responding to rangeland fire. We have a great system in Oregon of rangeland fire protection associations. They cover a lot of eastern Oregon, but they don't cover all of eastern Oregon, and they're under-resourced. We've all seen the very large range fires that have occurred in the last couple of years. So getting more resources on the ground for those entities is sort of the first priority. And then secondly, for the Oregon Department of Agriculture, there are actually two packages, 390 and 320, packages dealing with invasive grasses, annual grasses, and juniper. And these are resources that will leverage federal dollars that you're going to hear about in a minute from the Natural Resources Conservation Services for landowners on both private and federal ground to work on weed control and juniper. And then additionally, a package for ODFW also working on conservation practices to deal with both pre- and post-fire resilience. This is mainly the issue of weeds coming in after a fire, as well as to administer an all-lands mitigation program, something that Representative Bentz took leadership on 2 years ago in the last long legislative session, passing a bill that put that authority in place. And then finally, there's also a package for the Department of Land Conservation and Development to work with our local county jurisdictions on programs at the local level. So those pieces are in the governor's proposed budget. Obviously, we're advocating for those as we go through the Ways and Means process before the legislature. Representative Bentz has also proposed this legislation, 3334, to provide additional resources from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, again, to help these local efforts dealing with these three threats. And with regard to the bill, I think we are supportive of the concept of, and OWEB has invested funds in sage grouse restoration. We want to continue to work with Representative Bentz on some of the details of that bill, but it is our expectation that OWEB will provide significant funding for implementation of sage grouse conservation in addition to the resources that you see up here. Lastly, how do we provide that certainty, that assurance to the federal government so that we avoid a listing of sage grouse in eastern Oregon? Many of the folks on this committee went through the Oregon Plan effort with Coastal Coho, where we initially avoided a listing and then had the federal courts reverse that decision because they felt there wasn't enough certainty that the state would actually carry through on its commitments. So appreciate Representative Bence's effort here. We also expect that there will be an agreement between the state, cattlemen, local partners, and the federal services on exactly what the state is going to do over time to assure that we are doing what we need to do to avoid this issue for Eastern Oregon. We also have some good news recently in terms of federal government commitments of resources to this issue. The NRCS has recently committed $9 million to this conservation effort, and some of the funding that you see up here will serve as match, local match, state match for that federal funding for this effort. So I can't stress enough how important it is that the partnership aspect of this. Again, cattlemen, local government have really been important partners. This is not going to happen without landowners, land managers doing what's needed on the ground. We completely understand that and are working very closely with local partners, both the cattlemen and the counties on this. So what happens if we're not successful and there is a listing decision in Eastern Oregon? Part of this is we're not in complete control of our fate here. We're one state of 11 states dealing with sage grouse in Western Oregon. We're doing our absolute best. Many of our other states are working with us, but this is not completely within our control. We are committed that even if there is a listing decision of sage grouse in Eastern Oregon, we are going to make sure, working through these conservation agreements and through other tools, that we do not shut down the economy in Eastern Oregon, that we have continued ability for mining, for renewable energy development, for infrastructure to continue to go forward in that part of the state. We've been working at this for several years, and we're committed to seeing this through, working with our partners. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Jamie Damon again. I'm the project manager for the SageCon effort working out of the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University. Each of you should have a packet of several fact sheets. There are four different fact sheets. They look like this, as well as a letter from John O'Keefe. So I'm not going to... Richard really laid the foundation and hit on all the high points. I just want to walk through the fact sheets and offer a few highlights. So as Richard, what he ended with was the $9 million investment coming in from the National Resource Conservation Service. And one of the reasons why that money is coming in is because of the unprecedented level of collaboration that's been occurring in Oregon. We are leading the nation with our ability to bring together all the partners across federal, state, and local agency boundaries, as well as with private landowners, conservation groups, and stakeholder groups. And this effort is called SageCon, and it has been meeting regularly as the forum where all things sage-grouse are discussed for the last several years. This group includes more than 60 regular attendees. We usually meet out in Prineville or Bend or in the range, and it's just been a wonderful opportunity to bring everybody together and make sure that we're working across agency boundaries. So I just want to put that out there. So let's start with this, why care about sage grouse? There's a few specifics in here in the beginning. I want to underscore the vast nature of this, of the issue. The landscape is vast, the threats are huge. In the very first paragraph, it talks about how more than 2 million acres of Oregon sage-grouse habitat have burned in recent years, and that juniper expansion has proliferated, and we've been working to... will you be talking about exactly how much juniper we've eradicated?
I can.
Okay, that would be great, yeah, because I don't have that number. So the first fact sheet just really talks about how we've been working together. The second one focuses on fire and invasives, and I'm not going to go through that because the video really did a good job of doing that. The third fact sheet focuses on ranching and livestock grazing. And as Richard said, ranchers and public land managers are the primary stewards of sage-grouse habitat and are important partners in implementing the conservation efforts. The candidate conservation agreements with assurances, Harney County has led the way with that. Marty Sutter-Gold out of the Harney County Soil and Water Conservation District has really been a leader. And I spoke with Marty over the weekend, and more than 300 and 30,000 acres of private ground have been put in place with candidate conservation agreements. More than 50 private landowners have signed on. We have agreements pending with Crook, Deschutes, Malheur Lake, and Baker counties. So this is, we're really leading the West in terms of the number of private landowners that are signing on to the CCAAs. I wanted to read this letter from John O'Keefe. I spoke with him over the weekend. He couldn't be here today. He's the president-elect of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. So I just wanted to read this into the record. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3334. It has been inspiring to watch everyone pull together to prevent the need to list the greater sage grouse. Candidate conservation agreements with assurances, SageCon, All Lands, All Threats effort, LCDC rulemaking, ODFW rulemaking, NRCS sage grouse initiative, Westwide BLM RMP amendment process. Much has been done. There is much left to do. Much has been planned, and now we must implement. Dedicated funding has an especially key place in the listing process. Funding in place for sage grouse conservation will help the service make a decision that the listing is not warranted. Oregon has come a long ways to put this issue to bed. We must go a little further. We appreciate Representative Bence's intent to ensure a dedicated funding stream. We want to make sure everyone understands that the threats to the bird are also threats to communities and ranchers, requiring resources from multiple sources to support local implementation, such as for the RFPAs, the Rural Fire Protection Agencies, to address fire, and for the Soil and Water Conservation Districts to implement conservation measures on the ground. It is important that we continue to show a coordinated approach across state, local, and private lands and not rely on one source of funds. OEB has been and continues to be a strong partner, and we have every reason to believe that they will continue to make sage grouse an investment priority. Funding is always controversial, maybe now more than ever. However, I'm convinced that money spent ahead of a listing to keep Oregon in control of its destiny will be money much better spent than the money we could spend in the future to comply with burdensome, restrictive regulatory mechanisms that would come with the listing. Added to that would be the lost economic opportunities. We can have economic development in Eastern Oregon, but it will be easier, more locally controlled, and ultimately more productive in the absence of a listing. Thank you for your consideration. Again, John O'Keefe, President-elect of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. The last fact sheet really brings you up to date about where we are right now with the status of the state plan. The state plan, as you see in the title, is an Oregon Sage Grass Action Plan, formerly called the All Lands, All Threats Plan, because it really does look at all lands across ownership boundaries. The action plan delineates a set of actions that we will be working to implement in a coordinated fashion. Right now, we have a draft of that plan, and there are two very important components of that plan that are currently underway, which is rulemaking with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Service, as well as with the Land Conservation and Development Commission, with DLCD. The rulemaking with the Land Conservation and Development Commission is focused on closing the gap, if you will, to provide increased certainty to the Fish and Wildlife Service that for a small set of large-scale potential development that could occur in the range, that we have regulatory certainty to guide that development away from sensitive habitat. The rulemaking for ODFW is focused on amending the mitigation policy so that we are putting in place the mitigation hierarchy of avoid, minimize, and mitigate for those potential development opportunities, as well as having dollars being put into mitigation for conservation efforts. So I think that was all I had to add. So from here, Brett, you're going to pick up on some of the more specifics that ODFW is doing and directing conservation investments.
I am, and Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Brett Brownscombe, Acting Interim Director or Deputy Director with Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I'm recognizing that you have other bills to hear, I'll try to be brief, and that there are other people here to testify on House Bill 3334. What I wanted to cover was teeing off of what Jamie and Richard have already covered. I think that the high points are for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. This bird and this issue has been on the radar for a while. Richard covered the 2011 conservation strategy adopted by our commission. There are some key elements in that strategy that I wanted to touch on. One is the state manages for a population goal of approximately 30,000 30,000 birds. And right now we're not at that goal, but populations are cyclic with this bird. So getting hung up on one particular number isn't everything in the game. The big part of the game is on the habitat side. So population goals are one thing, habitat goals. The state's objective is a 70-30 objective where you have 70% of the habitat in advanced structural stages, habitat stages for sage grouse that provides them the broadest range of needs across their life cycles. The other 30% of the habitat is, you know, recognized as not being in ideal condition. Perhaps, you know, that's where you'll find a lot of juniper will persist in some areas. The effort is to eradicate and remove it to a significant extent, given the invasion that's happened over decades. Invasive grasses are also in that 30%, and that 30% is an area where restoration or habitat restoration work can occur. The partnership effort that's been touched on here is really big, and a lot of the work that has already been happening since 2010 includes actions from our conservation partners in the hunting community, whether it be related to guzzler projects in the high desert or sage grouse country, or fence removal projects from non-hunting other conservation partners. It really is a remarkable approach. The cattlemen, as well as soil and water conservation districts, and this is what Jamie touched on, as well as Jeremy Maestas, who you saw in the video, on private lands in Oregon, approximately, I think Jeremy quoted 68% of the juniper issue has been addressed on the priority private lands. That still leaves a large chunk to go. There are approximately 2.4 million acres of juniper expansion or invaded juniper habitat in Oregon. The large majority of the phase one or phase two, which are referred to as the high priority areas for treatment, are on federal ground, approximately, I think, 800,000 plus of those acres. The remaining, you know, 400,000 plus are on private. We've done a good job on the private ground. There's a lot of work left. And then the cattlemen are continuing to do that. The conservation districts are doing that. The invasive annual grasses issue is a huge issue that relates to the health of the forage, not just for birds, but for cattle, for mule deer, for other species. So the overall point on the partnership work, I think, is it benefits sage grouse, but it also benefits a whole lot of other things, other species, but also livestock and also jobs on the ground. This is active management, and this involves people doing things, whether related to annual grasses or juniper, that creates jobs and invests money in the economies of rural communities. So for ODFMW, we're focused on the big three threats. As part of the conservation strategy and in our current rules, we have the department has a core area approach, which is remaining central to the state's overall approach on this issue. The core area approach is essentially an effort to identify the best of the best remaining habitat for the bird. What it does is what we've been able to do through the department's conservation strategy is identify on just 37% of the bird's range, that's where 90% of the breeding population for sage grouse exists. So that kind of lets the effort that all the partners through SageCon have been working on know, all right, here's the best of the best. If we can try to steer development and other activities away from that core area habitat to avoid it, that's the ideal approach. And given that we're talking about 30% of the range, there's a lot of the range that's still open for other activities. But when we talk about certain activities with linear transmission lines or mineral resources that are locationally dependent, it's not always possible to, if the focus is on trying to make sure the door remains open for the economic future of rural communities, to have an absolute policy, which is the conversation that's been happening with the SageCon partners around the ODFMW mitigation rulemaking, as well as the DLCD rulemaking. And so our commission and the partners in SageCon and staff are engaged in teeing up the Fish and Wildlife Commission rulemaking that would achieve a couple objectives. One is flexibility that speaks to the social side and the economic side of the overall SageCon effort, but also it's founded on that approach of avoiding core habitat wherever possible, steering development away from that, and where it's not possible, investing mitigation resources in habitat actions that really address the big key threats, the big three of wildfire, invasives, invasive annual grasses, and juniper. So it's to tackle those big three, it's going to take a significant amount of partnership and resources. The mitigation concept is part of that. This bill, 3334, is part of the investment of resources. The governor's budget, of which the department has received recommendation for a chunk of funding from general fund, is a part of that. It's an issue that's not just a one-and-done thing. This is a partnership effort that's been going on for a while, with a lot of credit to private landowners and other partners engaged in conservation, and that's going to take sustained work from the state and the federal government's end and the local end over time. But from the department's end, we are poised to continue on the mitigation rulemaking end, and we're poised to continue building on the 2011 conservation strategy that we've been working through the SageCon partnership on, that retains the core area approach, the avoidance strategy, and really keeps our eye on the ball with the big three habitat threats. So with that, I think I'll try to respect the time, and I also have staff here for questions if any come up, but thank you.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger.
About a year ago, a little over a year ago, the department came in and they were asked the question, have you looked at predation? I went back and checked Idaho, Nevada, Utah. One of them said 70% of their predation was from a loss, was from ravens. And just to keep our mind sharp about predation, cormorants, salmon, around 50% of the smolts, depending. Antelope, years ago, 75% of the fawns were killed by coyotes. Reduced that top population of coyotes. That came up. Recent study, spring Chinook, adults coming back into the Columbia, 45 to 50% loss. I still don't see that you're neglecting a major factor. So I want you to tell me how you can do a recovery plan if you're not addressing predation. I don't believe it can be done. We're going to fail.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger. So what I'd like to do, depending on how we can get into this deeply, and I can bring Ron Anglin up, who's here to speak more to the details. What I can say is you're right that a plan should not neglect any of the threats. The predation threat is not the threat that has been flagged by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or in the state's conservation strategy or in the science as the primary threat, but it is, I think, recognized as we're talking about a bird that's a prey species for a lot of other animals. So when you look at that, there is predation. There are losses that happen annually to the bird. How that ranks relative to, or how that fits relative to other threats to habitat is something where predation hasn't come up in one of the big three threats, but I think the way we are tackling this in the plan is to not neglect it, but there is a specific subsection in the plan dealing just with predation, just as there is a subsection in the plan dealing with other issues, whether it be development related to wind or wildfire. In the predation subsection, it's recognized that of the plan and our approach, predation can be a locationally specific concern to population health. And where that exists and where those cases exist, the plan is to direct resources into dealing with that, whether it's corvids or coyotes or the like. And I can ask Ron to come up for more detail on the approach to predation if that would help, or continue the conversation separate from the hearing, whatever your preference.
Thank you. I'd prefer, just because of the timing today, to not get too deep into it, but I am going to recognize a follow-up question.
if you wait for the federal government to make a conscientious decision that makes sense from a federal agency, you will have no hair and be retired probably in the grave. I've been watching them since 1964. I went with the state police game there. That's 50 years of failure of federal management of all natural resources. Until you understand that, we've been working, you were there, with cormorants for, 5 years? And it's just like a hoop.
I can tell you've been waiting a long time, but it's your figure.
Yeah, well, the resources are more important than I am or the state agencies, but we have to address all of it if you're going to make it work.
Absolutely.
Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I'd like to thank Representative Benz. Thank you all for the wonderful work that's gone on with this very important issue to our state. Mr. Whitman, I just have a question. You mentioned something that that brought some interest to me, and it sounded like you had a reservation about some aspects of this bill. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Chair Witt, Representative McEwen. I think it's fair to say that we're still talking with Representative Benz about some changes to the bill that we think could improve it. Let me give you an example. The Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board has a relatively new program called Focused Investment Program, where they are going to dedicate a certain portion of the Measure 76 dollars to particular initiatives. The governor has requested, made a couple of requests with regard to that program in terms of what they might focus on. One of those is for sage-grouse. However, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, under its current schedule, is not scheduled to make a decision on funding for the Focused Investment Program until February of 2016. And we would, from the governor's perspective, prefer it if the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board might speed up their process a little bit here so that, again, in terms of getting certainty in front of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, we could do that. So that's one thing. There also is some policy concern about the precedent of legislative direction of OEB funding, particularly for the portion of Measure 76 funding that is into the grant program, which is 65% of the natural resources portion of the fund. So we'd like to work with Representative Benz on some language around some of those things to deal with those issues. All of that said, I think we're in complete agreement with Representative Benz that providing additional certainty to the Fish and Wildlife Service that there are going to be the resources here for this program for the long term is something that we share. It's been extremely important.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Yep. Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chair.
We've heard situations of where we're talking about predators, we're talking about invasive species, we're talking about juniper, we're talking about this, the fires, we're talking about this and that. When will we have a coordinated, complete package that we can look at and start setting benchmarks down on the ground and moving forward? Because if we don't, we'll lose the handle on this. And if we lose the handle on it, not only have we not only hurt 30 or 40% of the state of Oregon, but we've also lost a species. And that is a terrible crime. I had the opportunity in Burns to see this last year to see, remember Congressman Bob Smith? Mm-hmm. You know, he has a ranch over there still in Burns. And I was talking to his boys, and his boys said they used to have lots of sage grouse. They have none now. But now they are starting to take out juniper. So hopefully they'll come back. But do we have such a thing in place? And if so, when will we get such a plan in place? Because it's my understanding with juniper, and maybe you gentlemen or lady, you might know this. How much exact acreage do we have at this point? You know, not exact, but I mean pretty close. Well, I've heard from 5 million to 10 million acres. Well, that's quite a discrepancy in itself. And if it grows 1.5% per year, and it takes $100 per acre, and if it's 10 million acres, that means it's growing at a rate of 150,000 acres a year, which means that we have to spend $15 million to break even. So therefore, that means that we have to be on the threshold of willing to spend $20 million or more a year in order to gain on this stuff. And that doesn't include the predator part. It doesn't include the invasive species part. So do we have something that we're going to see a light at the end of the tunnel, I guess is what I'm asking.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, great questions. And I'll start answering and then turn it over to Brett Brownscombe for some of the more technical aspects. But first of all, with regard to your question about benchmarks, that is the purpose of the state sage-grouse action plan that we are about to issue the draft of here in the next, hopefully, a couple weeks. That will include benchmarks for all of the major threats to sage-grouse, including invasive grasses and weeds, as well as juniper. On the juniper issue, a couple of things. One, we being the federal government and the state government, have been spending resources on juniper removal for some time. We're not going to remove juniper everywhere on the landscape. So the key is really focusing in on the areas around the edges where the spread is occurring into the most important sage-grouse habitat and stopping and reversing the spread in those particular areas. So yes, it is going to require a significant investment of money on a continuing basis. Probably not at the level that you alluded to in your remarks. We can get you more detailed information on that. But we have been making progress and actually have the trends going in the right direction in at least certain areas of the state. But if I could, let Mr. Brownscombe give you a little bit more detail on the juniper piece in particular.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, yeah, and on that question, specific to some numbers, Richard alluded to the state plan that's coming out, and not just juniper, but on other threats, wildfire and invasive annual grasses. These are all issues and concerns and challenges where if we were to try to tackle every acre where we have invasive annual grasses or juniper or wildfire risk, we could easily create a bill that is remarkably beyond what the state resources have, and with any money we have, we can easily spend at the bottom of a well in a hurry. And so the approach in the state plan that you'll see is prioritizing the acreage that has the highest risk to whatever the issue is, wildfire, annual grasses, or juniper. So on juniper, there may be, you know, the number that you stated, Representative, statewide or range-wide, within just the portions of sage-grouse habitat, or what's identified by the science of sage-grouse habitat, there are 2.4 million acres of juniper. About 1.2 million of that is in what's called phase one and phase two invasion or encroachment. It's a successional stage, and there are other acreages beyond that 1.2 million that are important in phase three that would be important to treat. And there are potential connections with other conversations around juniper happening in the building. But that phase one, phase two, early phase of invasion is on that 1.2 million acres really key. And those are some numbers in the approaches to spend the money on the prioritized acres so that we can get the highest return on investment as a state or the federal government. And thank you for the question, because it demonstrates, I think, I want to appreciate the effort you've taken and Rep. Frederick and Chair Witt having gone out to sage-grouse country, sagebrush country, and the Oregon Outback, and other members of the committee, Representative Krieger. It's working with working with legislators who may not live in the have districts with sage grouse in them, but who still get the issue, is really, really important. So appreciate that.
And just a brief follow up: if you didn't catch the allusion, it's to the whole biomass issue in terms of the relationship between juniper and biomass as a potential source for other efforts that the state has undertaken. There may be some synergy there. Just wanted to make sure people understood that.
And before we leave, Representative Esquivel's question and your responses, I think his questioning underscores the need, really, of it's the very basis of why we need partnerships. No one can do it alone. I mean, it's impossible in terms of both money and resources. Just critical.
Follow up, Mr.
Chair. Please.
The reason I say that is because when I went to Burns, I know it was a long time ago. I wasn't with Lewis and Clark, but when I was a child, I spent a summer on Virgil Moon's ranch with my grandpa, because my grandpa worked for Virgil Moon at the Moon Reservoir. And there was sage grouse everywhere. Today, you don't see that. And I think that's just a crying shame, because my grandpa used to call them prairie chickens, is what he called them. And they were just everywhere. But I don't see that today, but I am seeing at least, and I never saw all the juniper that was there now, but I'm seeing that they are starting to take that out, and I would hope that we'd get back to the point of where we had what we had.
Okay. Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of different questions. Number one, the constant problem of state versus federal. So we've talked a lot about the state plan. What's the federal government going to do with all of this? Are they going to provide money? Are they going to provide other support? Or are they not?
Yeah. Chair Witt, Representative Gorsuch. We have several federal agencies, three federal agencies, very deeply involved in this effort. First of all, the Bureau of Land Management is the manager of the vast majority of the sage-grouse landscape that we're dealing with, has the responsibility of planning for conservation on those lands. A lot of their effort is focused on working with allottees, with ranchers on allotments to assure that the practices on those lands are consistent with the conservation of sage grouse. But it also means it's going to mean investments for that agency, the Bureau of Land Management. NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, has been mentioned. They've made already some past commitments to the state of Oregon, as well as this new commitment of a new $9 million grant to the state over a period of years. That's a significant commitment that will help our private landowners and managers with their work. And then finally, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service itself is also has and is putting resources into sage grouse conservation as well. So we are getting some significant participation from federal agencies. Oregon has been more successful, I believe, than any other state in getting federal resources addressing this issue, in part because of the effort that the cattlemen, the state, others have undertaken here. So we are, you know, by taking this on as a partnership, we are being successful in drawing in other resources.
Follow up,
please.
Now, to go back to the core areas versus the kind of overall area, just a quick kind of biological question. In this plan, is there a need to consider corridors for access between the major core areas, or are they able to, I don't know, do they need that sort of thing? I know a lot of times in wildlife you need a corridor to kind of maintain the viability of the population.
Chair Witt and Representative Gorsuch, yes. The short answer is so not all habitats created equal, and the planning approach does recognize core areas as kind of the best of the best. there are also mapped low-density habitat areas that are also very important. They may support birds at lower numbers, but they do support birds. Core areas are not the only place on the landscape where relatively high densities of birds exist. Core areas are the highest densities.
So those movements back and forth are important.
They are, okay. And especially when you have a dynamic landscape with wildfire in it and other forces where you want over time the kind of resilience in habitat that recognizes the bird's ability to move from one area to another, especially if disturbance comes in. And there are corridors, the work that's been done as part of the planning process on trying to map and identify where the key corridors of movement are, is an important piece of this.
Okay.
And it'll remain that way.
Thank you. Just one last thing.
Yes.
So for Representative Bentz and other legislators that are out in that area, I mean, this is a classic example of a major threat that could very much damage what I would consider an already damaged economy when you consider the other economic problems that we faced. So it would seem to me it's incumbent upon the state to do maybe that $20 million, whatever, to make sure that this is taken care of. I don't think that we can just stand idly by, let the species decline, but also let the economics of that area decline as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McLean.
This is short because I know you've been here a long time and we've got others that need to come up, but I wanted to thank you for the presentation, and also I was impressed with the partnership list. Mm-hmm. And since I've been here, there's been another partner maybe that you could add to that, and that is the Juniper group that is really working on trying to use Juniper for, I hate to have people keep saying we're taking it out, we're eradicating it, you know, we're gonna do this and that with it, and it costs us money. But the Juniper group of folks that really are trying to develop jobs and or economic vitality for some of those areas that you keep talking about, I think could be part of this group. And maybe they could add to the conversation and figure out, you know, because you're talking about key mapping areas, they're talking about key mapping areas. But it might be somebody else to add to the list.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Barreto. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to piggyback on what Representative Krieger said about predation. And I was visiting with a rancher at one of these conferences over in Baker, and he put these game cams on the nests. And he said, you know, first the ravens came and got these eggs, and then the weasels got them, the snakes got them. He said, and even a ground squirrel got these eggs. So even before they're even born, you know, you've got all this predation, and that that's not to exclude after that the coyotes, the foxes, and the birds of prey. And so it does seem like habitat is that the focus is on seems to be maybe the path of least resistance. But I would agree with Representative Krieger that if we don't take a look at this other element, it won't work. And I also wanted to ask a question on the chart up there as far as the highs and lows of the populations. You know, there were in 1982, there were 42,000. In 1985, 25,000. 89, 45,000. Then in 1996, 19,000. Were those highs and lows caused primarily by wildfires?
I'm a combination area.
Chair Witt and Representative Barreto, I'm going to give you my best answer and then maybe ask staff to follow up in more detail on this with you. But what... one thing to keep in mind is populations in with sage grouse cycle, and a lot of times they cycle according to climate conditions and moisture. Okay. And so often a good brood year will correspond with a good year in forage production and sagebrush health. Where wildfires, and we have had very significant wildfires, well over 1 million acres burned in sage grouse country in 2012, and another 400,000-acre fire last summer. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and through some graduate research, is continuing to do some monitoring of birds through transmitters that have been placed on birds to track and map how birds are responding to wildfires. And the evidence is supporting kind of what's already been known, that these birds have a really, really high high fidelity to their lek sites and to their nest sites. And even when a fire burns through an area, they'll go back to that site. And it may be bare ground and not viable for future nesting, and therefore cause lower nest success and lower numbers of birds, but they'll try. So the wildfires have certainly had an impact. I can't tell you how much that trend is exactly correlated with the wildfires, but I think the big picture thing to keep in mind is there's a good moisture years and good growth in habitat and sage grouse country is helpful to getting population trends up. Wildfire and drought has been a challenging pressure on those birds.
Okay, thank you. Just one more follow-up.
Please.
And then also, Brett, you and I talked about hatcheries, you know, and basically hatching chicks and letting them go. And you said that hasn't worked very well. It hasn't been real effective. But is there continued research being done on that? And are there dollars set aside for experimentation on maybe trying to get hatcheries to produce these birds?
Chair Witt and Representative Bredo, I'm not aware how much ongoing research there currently is on that. What I'd like to do is get back to you with an answer on specifically what's being done. I know we've had one of our former staffers at Department of Fish and Wildlife, Christian Hagen, who's now at Oregon State, like to confer with him, and I think he may have had some conversations on this with Representative Esquivel, because I know there's a lot of interest and questions on that issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Christian and I had quite a lengthy conversation about it, and the thing they found was they're trying that in Texas, and quite unsuccessfully, because the bird itself, what would you say, it isn't the sharpest tool in the shed anyway. And when they take it and put it into a false environment, then when it gets out in its natural environment, it's really unaware of birds, predators, and so they found that the success ratio is very, very poor on that. And that's a specific kind of a sage grouse down there. It's different than the rest of the other 10 states, but they found they've been very unsuccessful with it.
Mr. Whitman, you mentioned that 11 other states could potentially be, or a total, I think, of 11 states could be impacted by a listing. In addition to Oregon, are there other states that have stepped up and are trying to run state plans to avoid a federal listing?
Mexico. Chair Wade, again, I'll take an initial quick crack at this, and then Mr. Branscombe can probably give a little more detail. But Wyoming, all the states to some degree are undertaking a state planning effort. Some are being more active and have been working for longer than others. Wyoming, I think, is recognized in the eastern part of the range of sage grouse as being an early, very active state in terms of sage grouse conservation. There, the main issue is oil and gas development and conflict between that and sage grouse. In our part of the sage grouse range, Nevada, Utah, Idaho, are all undertaking efforts as well. Washington, frankly, the sage grouse range in Washington is pretty beat up already, and Washington is also working on a sage grouse conservation plan, but in a little bit different situation. So everybody's working to some degree. There's fairly close coordination between the states. Brett has been the lead for Oregon in terms of working with other states. So, Brett, I don't know if you have anything to add.
Chair, wait a bit of follow-up. Just not much to add on that other than in 2011, I believe, Governor Mead of Wyoming pulled together, along with then-Secretary of the Interior Salazar, a sage-grouse task force consisting of the 11 western states, and the task was let's not look at this in a vacuum. Let's get out of our state silos. Let's make sure we're working across the range of the bird on a coordinated effort to prevent a listing. And so every Western state is coming up with a state plan. Every state plan is a little different. The key message has been the threats that may exist in Wyoming related to oil and gas aren't necessarily the same threats that we have in the Great Basin on fire and invasives and juniper. But states should have the autonomy to and flexibility to craft state-specific solutions to their specific threats. And so long as the approach across the 11 states is, let's do that, let's be specific to what is really important in our given state or region like the Great Basin, then roll it all up. And ideally, that results in a situation where the Fish and Wildlife Service comes out with a not warranted finding in 2015. But every state is eyes wide open, working hard on a state plan, and addressing the key threats in their states, either through investment type approaches, regulatory approaches, and I think the partnership theme across the Western states is everybody is looking to partners to help with this because it's a public land and a private land issue.
Thank you very much. And I understand too, in the way of habitat and impacts on habitat, that as we've already discussed, we have an ability to help prevent a wildfire. We have an ability to go in and remove invasives in juniper and deal with the habitat fragmentation, which I think was part and parcel of Representative Gorsuch's question. But we don't have a lot of success, say, with perhaps raising a sage grouse in a hatchery type operation, perhaps for the reasons that Representative Esquivel was discussing earlier, that raised outside of the wild habitat, the birds don't do terribly well. And we haven't had very much success in creating, in literally creating leks, that the birds have a preference for a natural lek that goes on for perhaps thousands of years.
Yeah, Chair Witt, one comment on that is, I think where you're going with this is, so in Oregon, if you look across the Western states, we have some really good remaining habitat. And we also, the acreage of habitat in Oregon is still fairly significant compared to other states like Washington. You're right that it is very, once you lose important habitat, it's very hard to get it back. Recreating leks hasn't necessarily worked. However, there is a lot of science, research, and ongoing kind of pilot experimental monitoring work done on restoration, habitat restoration work related to sage grouse and grasses, both treating annual grasses and how to best do that, and post-fire, what do you plant, what species take best, and under what conditions. So in Oregon, we have some, the Burns Agricultural Research Station, for example, is a great asset. It's an asset that a lot of states don't have. We have BLM district scientists who are doing a lot of research on this, and we have practitioners in the landowner community on the ground, as well as the NGO community, including groups like the Nature Conservancy, that are actively doing kind of science on the ground to figure out in a challenging situation where we know we can't necessarily hatch birds and just put them out there or recreate leks, what can we do to really restore habitat health to the greatest extent possible? And that's where I think there's a huge amount of progress that Oregon has made, and we have resources that frankly, other states may not be relatively as well situated on.
Thank you very much. And I would just add anecdotally that over a period of about a decade and a half, I have watched in one area where there are some leks. And the BLM has been engaged in extensive removal of juniper. that I have watched the sage-grouse population rebound to amazing levels. Now, it may be a function of other things going on, and it may be the cyclical nature of their population, but definitely is a rebound in that particular area. And hopefully it's in large part due to the removal of juniper and improvements in restoration in the habitat. That particular area is very encouraging. So, with that, panel members, thank you so much for your testimony. I appreciate that very, very much. Thank you. Next, we're going to have a testimony from Burns by Harney County Judge Steve Grasty. And Judge Grasty, are you with us?
Well, let's check this and see if the audio is getting through okay.
We're hearing you, yes.
Okay, so good morning, and Chair Witt, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony this way. It's a rare occurrence when folks in our community don't have to drive 8 hours to be able to participate in these processes, so thanks. I also want to compliment your committee for recognizing a whole bunch of the problems that we in the community have raised over and over. The predation question comes up all the time, and we think it needs a little more focus. So, thank you. Representative Krieger, thank you for that question. I'll be real short. We have a couple other folks we hope you have time to hear. But I want to ground you in the situation here. I expect you have written testimony from myself, so I'm sure as heck not going to read it. But in Harney County today, we've got 9.1% unemployment, 150% of the statewide average. 23.4% of our families fall below the national poverty line. Today, with the drought conditions, we're already seeing a major reduction in the biggest asset we have economically, cattle. Those kinds of things make it really tough to participate with these. But I also want you to know the folks out here are survivors. And you've heard a lot of testimony about the solution to this. And over we hear the involvement with the locals is part of the solution, the CCAAs, if you will, part of that. And I can tell you that it was through local effort, not driven by state, not driven by federal, but the local effort and the leadership of the Harney SWCD, that that first CCAA was put in place. You heard the acreage, 330,000 acres in Harney County alone. And tomorrow there's a signing ceremony in which six other counties are gonna sign on to this. This is a huge commitment on the part of the people. The most dire circumstance listing of this bird could undo what little remains of our economy today. Our downtowns could fold, our small businesses, our veterinary services, our even our movie theater could see such a reduction that it will be hard to survive. We all saw that occur in the spotted owl listing years ago. But I want to leave you with one message that I hope you clearly understand. These partnerships are amazing, the way they've been put together. But I want to tell you, the leadership for those partners is driven more locally by folks in this county and in Southeast Oregon than it is from the agencies in Salem. Yes, we're trying to partner with them, but we stepped up and set the stage for local participation, for local collaborative decision making, and for a process where our community can provide the continued solutions for the wildlife that is so important to us. Yes, it's our community too, but that wildlife, anyone believes that it's important to outside folks and not to us, doesn't understand rural Oregon. What we need from the state is a commitment to partner again with us and to demonstrate the U.S. Fish and Wildlife that all of us in this state want to see a solution and that will help preventing a listing. I want to go back to that little movie of the guy going around with the clippers and cutting down the little junipers. That's a lot of work. I can tell you, given 8 hours and a set of those clippers, my wife barely got 2 acres done. So it's an awful lot of work. We hope to support this legislation ahead. We think it's an opportunity for all of us in this state to come up with a solution. I'm going to let Mr. Randy Whitaker from Harney Electric talk, if that's all right.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Randy Whitaker. I'm the general manager for Harney Electric. We're the cooperative that serves most of both Harney County and a large portion of Malheur County. If you recall the map that was put up there on the screen that showed the primary core habitat of the sage grouse critter, we serve the biggest share of that. We've actually overlaid our lines, transmission lines, distribution lines on those maps. We have 500 miles of distribution lines that run through the Corlec areas, 225 miles of transmission line. Why is that a concern? The reason that's a concern is in the document that is being proposed, there's three things they talk about for possible use of power lines. Number one is to remove them. Number two is to underground them. And the third one is mitigation. We didn't know what mitigation was and how to price that because it's unknown. We couldn't remove them because if we remove them, we essentially cut off the water to the ranchers that are living in Harney County. Could calculate what it would cost to underground those lines. We came up with a number between $400 million and $500 million to underground both the distribution and transmission lines for our service territory in southeastern Oregon. That roughly translates to about $400,000 per member. Your power company came up and asked you for $400,000 to help them underground power lines. I can imagine what the answer would be. That's the same answer we expect our members to tell us. So we're very, very much in support of House Bill 3334. I've also had some experience from the hydro side on the Columbia River and the issues regarding the endangered species that was listed with the salmon. And the biops that Bonneville has presented, they have been routinely turned down at the Ninth Circuit. There wasn't a potential funding stream at times, and that's been somewhat corrected. Even though they had hatcheries and had done modifications to the dams to allow better fish passage, it was the funding that the judge wanted long-term and a commitment. House Bill 3334 does that, and that's a very, very positive step for our community and for state of Oregon. I can go on, but I think in the interest of time, I'll pass this on and just thank you very much for this opportunity to speak. Any questions?
Questions or comments? Representative Esquivel, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Your Honor, your wife did 2 acres. How many did you do during that time?
Well, I did have the chainsaw. She's not very handy with a chainsaw. Chair, do we have time for one or two others real quickly from this site?
Judge, if we could limit it really to a 30-second comment, because I have a whole bunch of folks in Baker City that have been waiting for their opportunity to testify as well.
All right, we'll make it really quick, and I'll let Elaine introduce herself.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Quick question.
There?
Yes. Okay. Good morning.
Okay. Hi, I'm Elaine Davies. I'm a member of the Harney County Chamber of Commerce as well as a rancher. And in going through the math on beef cows, of 560,000 beef cows in January of 2014, 40% of those beef cows spend half of their life on BLM land. A single calf in 2014 was worth $1,500. If you divide that over a year, a calf is worth $4.11 a day. And with a value of $123 per AUM, that's an animal unit month for 30 days. Cows convert bunch grass, an otherwise unusable renewable resource, into a totally marketable product. This is a true economy at work. Grazing on BLM ground contributed $116 million directly into Eastern Oregon economy. That's only 40%, because this listing will affect all of the ground, not just BLM ground. So take that $116 million and add 60% more to that. We would ask that our state government stand with our ranchers in Central in Eastern Oregon that depend on this renewable resource and pass this House Bill 3334, stand against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife listing of the sage grouse. The survival of our heritage and our economy is depending upon that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we're going to do whatever we can. We appreciate your testimony, Representative McEwen.
And Chair Witt, in the spirit of time, I have a really brief question for Judge Grasty. We have discussed at length today the federal and state issues around this sage grouse issue. Are there any local land use issues that are creating problems for you in Harney County?
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Thanks for the question. I believe that Oregon's land use is simply the strictest land use laws on private ground in the nation. I'm not sure that we need more restricted language, but in an effort to try and resolve the issues that are being raised by U.S. Fish and Wildlife, I think we'll see some effort. I'm participating in it, as are many others, in trying to identify those few very large developments and how we allow them to happen while making sure that we avoid or mitigate impacts from them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else, committee members? Well, I want to thank all the good folks over in Burns. We certainly appreciate your testimony. And Judge Grazzi, thank you so much for your leadership on this issue. It's critically important, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything that we can here in Salem to be able to assist you. And please, if you sense there's something more that we can be doing, don't hesitate. I know you won't, to let us know. We appreciate it so much. Thank you. And now we'd like to hear from the good citizens from Baker City.
We may have to stand down just for a second while we change the feed.
Okay. If folks would bear with us here momentarily, well, can you hear us?
There.
Do we have a mute problem?
They may have to take their phone off of mute.
Would you try removing your phone from mute?
There we go.
How's that? Are we better?
Much better. Thank you. Good morning to everyone, and welcome to the hearing on House Bill 3334. We're the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and we would love to hear from you and what you have to say on this bill. Unfortunately, we are running a little short on time, and if you could each possibly keep your comments to 2 minutes, it would be greatly appreciated. We'd love to hear from you. Good morning.
Morning.
Please decide among yourselves the order in which you'll testify.
Good morning. My name's Kathy Reedy. I'm the owner of the Depot Inn in Sumter, which is a 14-unit hotel. As a business owner in a small community, I'm concerned. If the sage grouse will result in closing public access, it'll be devastating to small-run business like my own. In Sumter and many other Eastern Oregon communities, our business is made of ATV, snowmobile riders, and hunters. I would say 75% of my business are these folks. I would ask that you consider all options before making a decision that would ruin many small-run businesses, such as my own and others in my community.
Thank you very much. Who's next?
Hello, my name is Christina Witham. I'm owner of Oregon Sign Company here in Baker City. I would like to state the economic effects of the listing of the greater sage grouse as a local business owner in Baker County. The BLM has no jurisdiction over RS 2477 roads, nor do they own any minerals on the lands. The BLM is charged with facilitating development of mineral resources and managing the land, so limiting access to mining, ranching, hunting, and recreation is a direct and indirect effect to our environment and our community. Cumulative effects of the listing will spiral through our community from those directly affected to each of the local businesses who depend on them for income. Within those groups directly affected are businesses who I rely on for income as well. From the fueling stations, food and lodging, to supplies, maintenance, and equipment outlets that I currently do signage for. The more economically restrained those shops are, the more this listing will affect me as a local business owner. The trickle-down effect of the listing will be devastating to our community, our history, and our future. NEPA rules must be followed, and our community as a whole, must be considered before any decision can be secured. The research baseline and local factors were not adequately considered or presented in the initial EIS. At that time, ODFW studies showed that our greater sage-grouse numbers were within the desirable amounts needed for a healthy habitat. I urge the officials behind this listing to listen to the local communities, make informed decisions based on true facts, and follow NEPA rules. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Jacob Bingham.
I'm sorry, could you repeat your name again for the record, please?
Sure. My name is Jacob Bingham.
Thank you.
I'm a rancher, and I also serve in a volunteer capacity as a president of our Baker County Livestock Association. I represent over 200 other cattle ranchers in Baker County, and beef cattle production is the largest agricultural commodity of our county. I foresee a huge economic blow upon my ranch and my fellow and other fellow ranchers and in our area, just as these ladies have mentioned, if the sage grouse is listed as an endangered species. Listing the bird would increase our business expenses, I feel, in many ways, and specifically in increased pasture grazing fees. A higher demand for grazing land on private lands would be created if the numbers of cattle permitted on public lands is reduced, trying to save some of these core areas and whatnot. An increase of $10 to $15 per cow per month for an 8-month grazing period on a herd of my size would add at least $20,000 to my business expenses, and that expense alone. If I had to sell 10% of my herd because I couldn't compete with these grazing costs, then that would take $20,000 off of my bottom line. And as a young husband and father and provider of 5 children, $20,000 goes a very long way. Ask yourself, are you willing to give up that much of your bottom line for the sage grouse listing? Other kinds of wise management alternatives must be explored first. Consider the devastation the listing of the sage grouse would do to me, my fellow ranchers, and the communities in our areas. Thank you.
Vice Chair McLean, please. Before
I just wanted to say to all three of you that we really appreciate you coming in front of us today with the information about your community. And I also wanted to tell you that this committee is hoping that the plan that we can all work on together with all of the folks, the feds, the state, the counties, the property owners, and all of your organizations and the different groups that you've talked about today, is so we won't get a listing. We don't want to get a listing either, and we do understand that it does really affect you folks close to home.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I understand we have some other folks from the community that would like to testify as well.
Yes, my name is Debbie Bainter. I'm the Executive Director of the Baker County Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. Baker County Chamber of Commerce represents approximately 300 businesses in Baker County. 95% of the businesses of our business members are small, family-owned businesses with five employees or less. Rural economies are more fragile than urban economies. We mainly rely on our neighbors. Our economy, in our economy, and our value chain is very short. If the sage grouse were to be listed as endangered, it would start a chain reaction similar to the loss of the timber industry in rural Oregon. Much of our economy in Baker County relies on access to public lands. Ranching, mining, tourism would all be directly adversely affected. I'm sure I don't have to draw a picture for you about how the cattle industry would be affected by the loss of public lands or even mining. But second to ranching, our tourism industry would experience a terrible blow. Restaurants, gift stores, and attractions would begin to struggle. Baker County is Oregon's playground for hunting, fishing, exploring on ATVs, snow machines, hiking, mountain biking, rafting, boating, wildlife viewing. And for all of these particular recreations, there's actually a business that derives money and income from those recreations. Those businesses would dry up if access to our public land is lost. As I said, we're all interconnected. If we lose access to our public lands, the Baker County Chamber of Commerce will no longer be representing more than 300 businesses in Baker County. The Baker County Chamber of Commerce and our membership believe the sage-grouse restoration is effective, especially with the collaboration and partnership with the Cattlemen's Association, and we would like to support Bill HB 334.
Thank you so very much. Is there anyone else from the community that would like to testify at this point?
I think we do have our commissioner here.
Thank you very much.
Chairman Witt, I thank you. Representatives, my name is Bill Harvey, Chairman of Baker County. I'd like to point out the fact that this room would be overflowing in every room we have if people who are working would like to be here as well. We appreciate the opportunity to convey our messages and our information to you. This process here helps us greatly, and we'd love to investigate possible of using this more in the future. It really helps us connect with you and saves time and money. But what I do represent is I represent 17,000 people in Baker County, and they're all at risk of losing jobs, income, families. My children themselves don't live in Baker County anymore because of the job loss that we've suffered over here for the loss of our natural resources. Our cattle industry is strong right now only because of the hard work these folks are putting in for the last 40 years to try and develop habitat for all wildlife, not just sage grouse. They've gotten some success stories on their own. Without the studies, without the programs, without the federal dollars, they've been working hard throughout the years to do this, what you've asked us to do. And now it appears that we could do this and then be punished as well. We can't take any more economic hits in our area. These families are barely hanging on. Businesses downtown are barely hanging on. And it's not through more regulation. It's just for the lack of economy. We've got to have a base of economy to build something on. Baker County for 150 years had mining, timber, grazing, and all of that carried our county greatly through the last 150 years. It's all been taken away, and now what we have is even being chiseled away even more. The ranchers are trying desperately to manage their operations so that they can mitigate possible damage to wildlife. But gentlemen and ladies, they've already done everything they can. We don't have any more to give here, and I'm pretty sure that the folks on the west side of the state don't want to keep subsidizing us over here, because we certainly don't like taking the money for that. We'd rather make our own incomes, our own lives, and lead what we've already determined is a good way of life over here in Baker County. All of Eastern Oregon is the same way. We need the opportunities to create jobs on our own. We don't need more subsidies. We don't want programs. We just want to be allowed to use what we have wisely, which we have been doing for many, many years. We want to show people that we can do that. we're urging you not to really give us more money, but to stop the federal government from their overreach. We need to be able to accomplish what we know how to do best. The mismanagement has caused more problems over here than so-called programs that are going to help us. So we need the help to cut back on so-called management that's guided to help us and to take care of problems. Predation was brought up many times throughout this whole program, and yet Fish and Wildlife, in their testimony that I heard, don't even list it as one of the major problems. They acknowledge it, but they don't list it. We have more ravens and crows in this area than we have sage grouse anymore. And yet we can't do anything to stop one species from destroying another. All the habitat in the world isn't going to take care of anything if the numbers outnumber each other. So you've got to help us to stop the feds from the overreach to begin with. I think in some of the endangered species acts, they're only requesting that you have a plan. Doesn't mean you lock up everything, that you have a plan to manage the habitat, manage the wildlife, and take care of what you have, not lock it up and put it away from our reach so that we can take care of it the best way that we know how. I appreciate the time that you've given to us over here, and we hope to have this opportunity again in the future.
Chairman Harvey and everyone else who's shared your testimony with us this morning, we are greatly appreciative. Thank you so much. And as Vice Chair McLean has already stated, it's our intention to be able to try and help you. You're doing the work on the ground. Politically, we're going to try and do whatever we can here from Salem to help avoid a listing. In any event, to be able to continue to promote the Sage Grouse Action Plan. We want to thank you ever so much for all your hard work on that. And as Ms. Boehner pointed out, we're all interconnected. We understand that, and we certainly want you to let us know as things progress what it is that we can do to be helpful. We're ever mindful of all the good folks over in Eastern Oregon, and we are interconnected, and we won't lose sight of that. Thank you so very, very much for your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
And good day to everyone. Committee members, we're now going to have a public testimony here in this room on the building. And folks, I'm going to have to announce that I'm going to carry forward House Bill 3333. We are just not going to have enough time. And I'm also going to have to carry forward, that would be the public hearing, and I'm going to have to carry the work sessions on House Bills 2207 and 2243 forward as well. So anyone who's there for those, I apologize. I'd like to call up next, please, Claire Clark. Meta, do you, Ms. Lofsgarden, you've already testified. Did you want to come up again?
Not on this bill. Just some information toward one.
Fine. I think that concludes our panel of witnesses. Thank you very much. Good morning, sir. Welcome.
I'm on. Okay. I'm Claire Clark from Corbett, Oregon. I've worked as a farmer and a resource conservationist and educator for the past 40 years. I came opposed to House Bill 3334, but I've changed it to neutral based on the information that we learned today. And that's one of the things that's good about these sessions is that you do learn a lot more. In my capacity as a resource conservationist, I've used OLEB in the past for small grants and for small landowners, and I realize that they have a large grants program. The focus initiative that they talked about, I just learned about that today. One thing I do fear is that, and it's maybe a strong word, but raiding the OWEB budget to fund sage growth would undermine the effectiveness of their other programs. And I can say that, yes, we do need matching funds, and there should be something from OWEB. But they do have a rigorous process that for grant selection, and they do put their applicants through the paces. And so that's basically what I have to say today, so neutral on the issue now. So,
right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ms. Lofsgaarden.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. I just want to briefly address, for the record, Maida Lofsgaarden. I'm executive director with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Since this bill is directly related to our funding, I just wanted to provide you a brief background and answer any questions that you might have. Just some history. Since 2000, OWEB has invested about $8 million in support of sage-grouse projects throughout eastern Oregon. In addition to those investments, a lot of the conversation that you heard earlier today around the SageCon effort was funded through our agency as well. We've provided about $650,000 in support of that work. $90,000 went directly to local soil and water conservation districts for technical assistance with writing the site-specific plans, the CCAAs that were talked about earlier. Our board's ability to flexibly invest in the SageCon effort over the past 2 years has helped leverage those additional funds that were spoken about earlier, the $9 million of NRCS funding, and the other partnerships are made possible through the investments that we make. I want to speak specifically to Representative Bent's mention that our board is headed down this path already. I think it might also answer a little bit further Representative McEwen's question earlier. Since June of 2013, our board has been working on a focused investment priority program. The goal is to invest a portion of the agency's grant funds through focused investments. For those of you, probably particularly Chairman Witt, who know our agency's history, it's a pretty big shift for our agency to move to focused investments. We've been a very responsive across the state grant-making program. So our board has been really deliberative about that process. Through their process, they've consulted with communities across Oregon to ensure that the top issues of local concern are raised. As a result of the process, 42 initial submissions came in for priority investments across the state. And we've reframed those around six very broad scale priorities. One of those is sage steppe habitat for the support of sage grouse. In order to consider these priorities as quickly as possible, our board has agreed to hold an emergency meeting. They're meeting tomorrow to discuss this with the goal of determining the priorities in April. Sage grouse has and continues to be incredibly important to our board. They are moving forward as quickly as possible, and they are cognizant that they have to do so in a way that is also reflective of the rest of the state who has been submitting priority proposals as well. Last year, they announced a timeline to finalize the priorities this April. That then opens the opportunity for local partners to apply for funding. Funding is not available until February 2016, which is the challenge, the timing challenge that Representative Bentz raised earlier. We recognize the purpose and the need for this bill and the need to provide assurances sooner than later. We're working with other state and federal agencies to identify approaches that provide those same assurances in hopes of either precluding the need for this bill or, as Richard Whitman noted, working through details of the bill language itself. We would be glad to keep you and the sponsor informed of our progress on those conversations.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. Certainly appreciate the emergency meeting. Please share our appreciation with the rest of the board members.
Right.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify this morning on House Bill 3334? Seeing none. Oops. Yes. All right.
Real briefly. Thank you.
30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds.
Jenny, you're being timed.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I work for Oregon Farm Bureau. I just want to convey Oregon Farm Bureau support for House Bill 3334. You heard today about the voluntary agreements that ranchers have been engaged in the community, and we believe this bill shows a commitment to moving forward with sage-grouse habitat restoration protection. Thank you. For the
and you did it. 30 seconds. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3334, and we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
That was good testimony.
Stand adjourned. Thank you very much.